And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Dollars and Making Sense. I'm Ray Trevison from OTG Capital. I'm really pleased to have at the microphone today somebody different. You're used to hearing Philippa, you're used to hearing Phil and Natasha and a whole bunch of other people and Karen and Lisa. But today I have Louise Bedford and she is from tradinggame.com.au. Now, one of the things that you'll always hear me banging on about is bonds. And so I'm a bit of a biased person when it comes to bonds. And today I'm actually getting Louise on today to talk about equities, about trading in stocks and shares and equities, which is all the same thing. Now, I guess one of the things that I always like to introduce people to the show, Louise, is to really establish your bona fides. So we got introduced through a mutual acquaintance. And so from that perspective, what I'd like you to do, please, maybe give us a little bit of a bio about who you are and where you've come from. We'll kick off with that and then we'll get into a little bit about share trading and the like.
Absolutely. Ray, look, I think one of the things why we've related so well is that a lot of our values are almost identical. We believe in financial literacy, spreading the word so that people can make exceptional trading decisions and financial decisions, and increasing people's levels of education, even in the psychology area, so that their income can match that level. So I love that. And I think that's one of the reasons why we've bonded. So a bit about my background. For the listeners, I have got an AFSL, which is Australian Financial Services License, and they keep you studying for that too. So there's a lot of continuous professional development.
Don't we know it?
Don't tell you in the beginning, do they? So there's that. I've got degrees in psychology and business. I've been involved in the markets since 1990, so that's going back quite a long time. But I'm also the best-selling author of 5 books on the share market. I run a mentor program, and I've been running that for, gosh, it's 23 years now. So time has ticked on.
She doesn't look it, ladies and gentlemen. She does not look it. I kid you not.
Love. This is why I'm on the show, of course.
Of course.
And I run a podcast, which is another thing we've got in common, Ray. I love my Talking Trading podcast. And a lot of the things that you're doing with your people, with your tribe that are following you, it's a similar thing to what I'm doing with my people, aiming to increase their education so they can make better financial decisions.
And fascinating you say that, because when I first started Dollars and Making Sense, it was purely about education. Now, the purpose and one of the things about doing community radio, they make a big play at us when I did my training to become a radio presenter. They said, look, it's community radio. You're not going to come on here and do a product flog. And I think people are very wise and savvy. The internet has a lot of trips and traps, I think, for people, but it's also educating people a lot as well, because I think people are a lot more savvy to the spiffs and the snake oil salespeople. And I think if you are doing a very blatant product pitch, I think people are wise to it a lot more these days, and certainly the younger generation are onto it like crazy. I mean, I've got 3 kids all in their 20s and they can spot a scam artist from a 1,000 kilometres away. I kid you not, they are so good at spotting this mob. And so I guess from that perspective, if we were doing the educative perspective, but then, you know, slipping in, oh, and by the way, I've got 6 extra steak knives here while you're coming along. You know, obviously people would be sitting there going, I smell a rat. And so I think from that perspective, we've always tried to keep it education only. Now, the reason I make mentions of people's websites and I guess my own company as well is we establish those bona fides by, you know, saying, look, we're in the marketplace. It's the same thing. I have an investment fund. I have clients and investors. I used to be a financial planner myself, decided not to stay in that field because I always wanted to have my own fund. And I run my own AFSL as well. And so it establishes the bona fides that gives us the right to actually say we know what we're talking about. And Louise, I'm really pleased to have you on the show because I feel like you've earned that right to be able to say, you know, this is what I do when it comes to trading and the like. And we've got our battle scars of wrinkles and my balding pate and grey hair and all of that. And they're the badges of honour, I guess, because One of the things we were talking about, ladies and gentlemen, before we came on air is about finfluencers. And one of the things I was very wary about in first connecting with Louise was, oh my God, I thought, oh no, not another finfluencer that's got a nice fancy looking podcast. And Louise, I got to say, the quality of the content that you put out really is quite superb. The look and feel of it's very, very slick. And
Thank you so much. I love it. It is my passion project.
I guess. But I think that the element there is that there's some meat and potatoes behind it. It's just not flimflam. And one of the things I was speaking to Philip Hunt earlier in the year was around finfluencers and the fact that ASIC decided to have morning tea with about 30 or 40 of them that had been making a lot of hay in TikTok and Pinterest and Instagram. But the thing is, when you scratch beneath the surface, there was nothing there. And, a lot of them were simply rehashing content from moneysmart.com.au. And this is one of the sites I constantly tell people to go and see because it's, you know, done by the ATO. It's done by the government, and it's some excellent, excellent information there. But these guys were just rehashing it. And so ASIC came along and shut them down and didn't give them any time. They just said, go away. And
I love that. You know, we need to have regulation in markets to protect people who cannot protect themselves. That is one of the reasons why, with some unknown, unregulated markets, no wonder we cannot possibly ever say, check those out, Ray, because there is no protection. And in some ways, that type of trading and that type of market led by those influencers, it's almost like a religion.
It is. And I guess one of the interesting factors when it comes to, you know, crypto is something that I actually talk about in my market wrap every week. You know, I have the Dow, I have the ASX 200, I have gold, I have the Aussie versus US dollar, and I do Bitcoin. Now, people ask me, well, why do you do Bitcoin? I said, well, that's the new tulip, right?
Yes.
We had the tulips back in the day. Now, you know, during the past week, we have heard about somebody that's made a ton load of money in online gambling, loot boxes, and crypto. He's 27 years old, and he's just bought an $80 million property in Toorak. Now, because you're from Melbourne, you can tell the listeners, I mean, we're up on the northern beaches where this show is broadcast on radio. But Toorak is sort of like the eastern suburbs of Sydney. You know, Toorak in Melbourne's quite a highfalutin suburb, isn't it?
It's a place people want to live. Mm-hmm. Toorak is really the spot if you want to have snob value.
Okay. Well, this guy's 27. He's bought an $80 million property and he's going to bulldoze the house.
Yeah, look, you know, the thing that I like about that story, though, is that firstly, it is possible. And secondly, he must have known when to get out.
Well, fascinatingly, again, I have three gamer children or children that are young adults now, but he's made his money from loot boxes as well, and he's not allowed to actually trade in Australia. So that speaks volumes for what he's doing. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It simply speaks volumes for what he's doing. Draw from that comment all you wish. But, I mean, the lad at 27 is killing it. He's absolutely killing it. That's not his first piece of property. It's about his third or fourth. And his other two or three acquisitions have been equally as impressive. So hats off. He's making money. I mean, I personally don't necessarily like what he's doing, but it's a free world. And in that regard, good luck to him. Anyway, let's move on. Now, we talked about AFSLs and we talked about ASIC and we've talked about trading. So what we're actually going to talk about today, ladies and gentlemen, is trading plans. Now, I'm an old army guy, keep it simple, stupid, because I am very simple in that regard. And we have an old idiom that I think really pervades quite well in what we're talking about today. If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. So, Louise, tell me about why you bang on about trading plans.
Trading plans are so important as a core to my philosophy. It's something I really believe in. I'll actually just mention a little bit of research about checklists, which is like mm-hmm. a trading plan. In the States, they did a big study in the medical industry about if a surgeon follows a checklist, what happens to the mortality rate for their patients. So they studied cardiologists and they found that the surgeons that followed checklists, their mortality rate for their patients was 8% less than the surgeons that didn't follow a checklist. So it gets your attention. This is actually a separate industry completely, but it does show that when we are in the heat of the moment, we cannot think clearly. It is like we're primed for action. It's limbic system oriented. It's lizard brain, and it's fear, and it's greed, and it's lust, and yeah, all of those swirling emotions going through our brain, which means that all that layering on the outside, the cortex, just switches off. So you are as dumb as a mug during the times that the markets are open.
I tell you, I hope Philippa Hunt is listening to this podcast, because she's a trained psychologist as well, and she uses these terms to me all the time. And it's very salient right now. It's time for a short station announcement. You're here on Dollars and Making Sense. I'm Ray Trevison from OTG Capital. I'm absolutely privileged to have at the microphone today Louise Bedford from tradinggame.com.au, and we'll be back in just a moment. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Dollars and Making Sense. I'm Ray Trevison from OTG Capital. I'm really pleased to have at the microphone today Louise Bedford from tradinggame.com.au. And today we are talking about trading plans. Now, one of the things that really gets my goat is that we have five asset classes that people can invest in. Yet every time I go to AIA meetings or ASA meetings, or I go to industry shows and I meet punters, they always talk to me about cash or stocks. And so they forget, you know, bonds, and they forget about commodities, and forget about real estate, because, you know, to them, real estate's really one or two things. They buy their home or negative gearing. And, you know, even in real estate as an asset class, there's so many more bounds to that asset class alone. So I guess, Louise, do you find the same thing, that people really focus just on cash and stocks, or is that just my imagination because I'm a bonds guy?
No, you're 100%. I think what happens is we're used to seeing the news where they're saying BHP does this, Rio does that, and it imprints in our brain, and we think that that's all there is to life.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, we believe those talking heads, and unfortunately a lot of what they are talking about is complete kerfuffles, because I hear things coming out of their mouths like, oh, the share market today went down on profit-taking. And if you can explain that to me, Ray, then my goodness, good on you. They say the most ridiculous things. So I do think that we do have to be careful as investors and traders that we think about specific risk versus non-specific risk. Mm. The difficulty with only trading equities is that that involves specific risk. So a company can go down, it can go out of business, and it can take your money with it. So mostly there is a warning when that happens, and you'll have a chance to get out, but only if you're looking at the share chart. If we've got something like an index, for example, or an ETF, an exchange traded fund, that's a composite. Managed funds are the same. There's more than one entity that you're trading by trading that ETF or managed fund. And that's a great way to get diversity and a spread so that you're not subject to specific risk. There's also another.
I love these terms, Louise. I love these terms, because these are the things that I bang on about all the time. Diversity, spreading the risk. And I love that terminology, specific risk versus non-specific, because people get lulled by big names in shares, don't they? They get lulled by a brand. They get lulled into thinking, well, I'm not going to lose my money if I invest in them, am I?
Oh, it's so true, and it's delusionary. It absolutely is. I remember one time, Ray, you were telling me about Ansett. Maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. I was mentioning in between the break, ladies and gentlemen, that I actually carry a business card holder. It's ancient, just like me. It's leather, just like me. And it's got an imprint there called Ansett Golden Wing. I used to be a member of the Ansett Golden Wing Club, and that company went bust on September 11th, 2001. And we all remember that date, because if we were around, we remember two planes going into two towers and another two that had been hijacked. And we've never forgotten that day ever since. But I also remember that day because one of the biggest corporate names in this country went broke. And they went broke for a whole bunch of very, very good reasons, but they went broke right under people's noses because they were asleep at the wheel. And the same thing happened recently with Dick Smith when they floated. The people that plunged their money into that PE deal, and PE being private equity deal, was that, you know, this was a company that got taken over by a hedge fund. And when they pushed out the prospectus, nobody read it. But anybody with sane heads that had read the prospectus would have sat there and said, well, hang on, how can a company valued at $200 million, you know, 6 months ago be all of a sudden worth $450 million 3 months later and they haven't changed their revenues? Nobody bothered to ask that question, and a lot of people lost money. And so you're absolutely right, Louise. You know, people are not, you know, I think this irrational exuberance, I think it was it Ben Bernanke, the head of the Fed chair one year when things were going crazy with the internet craze back in 2001, 2000, and he called it irrational exuberance was the term he used. Have you heard that term?
Yeah, I definitely have. It was around with the Poseidon days, with the tulips, more recently with GameStop. There are definitely specific things that we need to watch out for that determine manic behavior. And manic behavior is what you want to avoid, because what goes straight up can come straight down. There's no support as it goes up, so it's more likely to drop like a stone. The other thing that I do think is important, Ray, is that when we're looking at things that have that spread, that diversity, there's a concept called survivor bias. Have you been familiar with that one before?
Are you talking fight or flight?
Actually, this is how indexes or indices are comprised. So what happens if you've got something like the ASX 200, which is our standard benchmark index? Right. Do you know that the ASX 200 is reevaluated each quarter and the duds are taken out and the good ones are put in?
That's no different to the Dow Jones. I mean, the Dow Jones, when I ask people, do you know what the Dow Jones is? They go, oh, not really. You know, oh, that's all the companies on the American exchange. I'm going, no, it's actually only 30. It's only 30 companies, and they ship them in and out because according to their respective capital value, they ship them in and out.
That's exactly right. So when we're investing in something like an ETF or something that is an index as its basis, what we're talking about is something that has an upward bias. Because they're getting rid of the duds and they're putting in the good-looking ones that have got sex appeal, you've got something that's going to go up and up and up. And it's on average over time. I'm not talking about minute little changes. It can drop, of course. You know, that's the way it goes. But on average over time, you will have an upward bias for those conglomerate type of managed funds and indices.
Now, we were talking about trading plans and my little idiom of if you, you know, fail to plan, you plan to fail. I guess one of the things I'd really like to cover off today, Louise, is basics 1.01 about trading plans. Maybe you might make a short introduction to the listeners then. You know, what are the basics of a trading plan that you start looking for, and particularly with the people that you mentor that come to you and chat to you on your website and through your normal channels?
Well, look, the first thing is barely anybody trades with a trading plan. It is just the most peculiar thing, right?
That's staggering.
Isn't it staggering? It really is. And I've found that the people who have committed their thoughts to paper, they're the ones that have less ego, they're more humble, and they're more likely to make a profit. So one of the things that I feel everybody listening should do is detail their trading system in their trading plan, which is your entry, so how you get into a particular trade, your exit, how you get out, what price are you going to say, I was wrong? What pain point is going to be enough for you to exit?
So you're talking about cutting and running.
Thinking about that in advance, exactly, before you even put a cent into the markets. And then the third part of a trading system is how much money to place into that position. So that's position sizing. So your trading plan has to cover your trading system, but also some things that are more like business plan type of ideas. So what will you do when you go on holidays? If you get sick, who has access to your passwords?
That's good.
Things like that.
That's disaster recovery type stuff, business continuity kind of things.
Absolutely.
That's from my old IT days. I guess one of the fascinating things, when I was trading myself, I was a trader for about a year, and I used software. So I used a software trading program called, I'm not actually going to mention them today because of the being community radio. Anyway.
There are a lot of them around.
I used this one and I trained up, and I found the learning curve on this was particularly steep. And this is what always, Louise, I want to talk to you maybe in the next session today, in today's show, about how people do or don't train themselves. Because I find the learning curve around trading equities, to be a good equities trader, it's a pretty steep learning curve. And yet I meet people almost on a daily basis that I think, and maybe I'm being very cruel here, but I think you're not really cut out to be a trader, yet they've got so much of their personal wealth tied up in equities. And I'm scratching my head going, God, I hope they're sure things, because I'm not so sure they really know what they're doing. And so I guess one of the aspects of this trading plan, I want to ask the psychologist element of you. Many people, I think, are really easy at buying. So the FOMO thing, the fear of missing out, they see something on the rising, I'm going to get me a piece of that. What is it about selling stocks? Because people, there seems to be this 90-10 thing I see, and it's just a casual anecdotal observation. There's 90% of the people out there would love to buy, but hardly anybody knows how to sell. What's that all about?
Yeah, we have an optimism bias. We think, we think it's going to just be so much better than it actually is going
to
be.
It'll come back. It sounds like somebody in the pokies. If I just put another $50 in, I'm going to get the jackpot.
Exactly. And so the unfortunate aspect with that is it means that to admit when something has gone down that we were wrong. Hard to say, isn't it?
It's like that. It's like Happy Days, that old Fonzie thing, right? Now,
the Fonz really needed to take a few lessons before he pops his money into the markets. So I think to be able to decide in advance doesn't mean that you have to say that you're wrong. It means that in that particular situation, the probability wasn't in your favor. So be careful how you frame it. You're not a loser if you make a loss. That's something I hear all the time. I'm just such a loser. No. Every trade has the advantage of being able to give you a life lesson, give you a lesson in what it takes to experience another aspect of the market so that you can grow and develop as a trader.
No, that's really very valid, commentary. I guess one of the things, though, that when we're looking at trading plans, I love going to the internet and just plugging it into my search engine, and I put in trading plans. Man, I got absolutely avalanched with so much data. There's just so many people out there pushing this trading plan barrow. I guess, given your background and training, what are the gems that people should be looking for then? Because when you're in this sea of so many things to choose from, what's going to stand out that says, look, this one's good, you know, these ones are good? Because not all of them are going to be bad, but I think there are some that are going to be better than others. What are the kind of things that you would be looking for?
Yeah, you definitely need some sort of template to follow, which is something that I love to provide people on my site. Mm-hmm. But maybe if I can give just a few steps about what to do, to create your own trading plan. I'm a big believer in people creating their own trading plans rather than just stealing somebody else's. Using a template is a different matter, because then you'll fill that template in, but with your own levels within that.
Yeah, I guess, sorry to quickly butt in, but this is the thing of the Oracle of Omaha. Everybody always looks to Warren Buffett as being the guy that always gets it right. He doesn't. Correct. He doesn't always get it right, does he?
And
so copying someone else, there's a whole range of foibles there. But sorry, I interjected, but please. So you're saying let's start from a template?
Yes. So one of the first things to do is to establish why do you want to be a trader in the first place. Write down on paper your desires. What do you think this is going to do for you? Because trading is not for everybody.
But am I being too simplistic when you ask that question? Everyone's going to sit there and go, I want to make money.
But are they? See, I don't see that always. I thought okay. so too until I'd seen so many trading plans. Sometimes it's to do with spending time with their family, more travel, being able to say no to the demands of an unreasonable boss. You know, dig down deep and work out what is it that an extra income source will provide for you. Some people just want to add to their skill sets, develop those building blocks to be able to help them in other areas of their life, because we know the way you do one thing is the way you do everything. So have a good look to see what is it that appeals to you in the first place about being a trader.
Yeah, it's interesting because one of the reasons I stopped trading, I mean, it's a funny thing because people say, well, why did you stop, Ray? And I said, well, because I ran out of fingernails to chew. It was keeping me up late at night. I was trading US equities and doing quite well. I mean, I had a 25% year in a time when the market got hammered. I mean, it was right in the middle of the GFC. And I say this story because it was the one thing I learned a lot about myself. And it's some really salient points you made before, because whilst I had a great year trading, my home life was crap, quite frankly, because I was staying up at all nights doing these trades. I had no fingernails because I was doing some, what I would look back on it now, going fairly risky trades, and I was shorting stocks as well. And we can talk about what shorting is and is not at another time. But I was doing stuff that I look back on now going, that wasn't exactly clever. And funnily enough, I came to the same conclusion at the end of it, saying, do I really want to be a trader? And I think at the end of 12 months, I sat down and looked in the mirror and went, no, I don't have the make for it. I don't have the personality for it. And I think you make a really valid point. Not everybody can be a good trader or even a trader at all, don't you think?
I agree. I would like to think that everybody can, but maybe on their own terms they can. So it could be if perhaps that was your hot button where you're having to make too many decisions, experiencing decision fatigue and lack of sleep, because that market was not right for you, right? You should have potentially considered something where you could get some sleep. That is something that needs to be woven into our trading plan. And that leads me on to my second point. Define which markets you want to trade. And I suggest you have more than one. So it might be something like a couple of different markets, but with one different time frame that you're trading. It might be a different type of instrument, like options. So it could be something like this. It could be Australian equities on a weekly chart. Right. It could be CFDs, contracts for difference, which include some leverage on Australian charts, but on a daily time frame, and maybe index trades. That would be a beautiful combo. So name it in advance so that you can research those specific areas and give yourself that knowledge content that you need to trade them effectively.
Okay, well, look, this is a great time for a break. And when we come back, I want to talk about the time imperative a little bit more. So you're here on Dollars and Making Sense. I'm Ray Trevison from OTG Capital. I'm really pleased to have Louise Bedford from tradinggame.com.au. And we're going to take a short station announcement and be back with you in just a moment. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Dollars and Making Sense. I'm really pleased to have at the microphone today Louise Bedford from tradinggame.com.au. And we've been talking about trading plans, about equities, about asset classes and a whole range of different things, because you're probably sick and tired of hearing Ray bang on about bonds. So today we're hearing about Louise banging on about equities. Now, one of the things we were talking about before we went to the break was, you know, are trading plans right for people and what makes up a good trading plan? And one of the things I'd written down here is time. Now, we were talking about timing, and I always read a stack about timing the market and all that kind of stuff, but that's not the kind of time I actually want to specifically talk about right now. In your experience dealing with the people that you mentor and people that come to your website, are people being realistic about how much time, personal time, they have to devote to being a good trader, or are they selling themselves short in that space? Because I find, even just, you know, I have an investment fund. People don't read the IMs. They don't read the information memorandum. And when I ask them, because I tell them, I want them to know what they're investing in. Did you read the IM? Oh, no, I don't have time for that. And it's like, guys, you're just about to invest $100,000 in my trust. Please read the document. Do you find the same thing?
Absolutely. We are fractured now with our focus, with the focus of our concentration. It's almost like we are just chasing the next shiny object because it has entered into our brain. I think it's even worse since the lockdowns and since the pandemic because people were constantly looking for something to distract them. And now we've trained ourselves to have like a 2-second memory span, which is worse than a goldfish.
So but doesn't that drive you insane? You know, I've actually stopped some of my future clients saying, please read the document. I've even developed these little cartoons with a 2-minute video because they say, I'm not really sure what you do, Ryan. I'm going, and you're just about to invest all this money. No, stop. Go and educate yourselves, please. And I actually stop business coming to me at times because I just want to have the comfort that they know what they're investing in. And I mean, it must frustrate you because with equities, I find equities is so much more difficult to grasp than, say, buying a bond. I mean, I just say that bonds alone. But when you're buying equities, there's a whole range more level of complexity. Or am I maybe being a bit disrespectful of equities?
I do wonder, though, it depends on your method. So if you've detailed your method, which I'm looking at technical analysis, so I'm looking at price and volume action to make a decision on the chart. Okay. I have got a specific template that I'm looking for, and it's almost like, Ray, when I was single, I had a list of qualities that I wanted my future husband to have. He had to have this and that. Look, a lot of women do have that list. I had it actually written down. Can you believe it? So the whole written trading plan for marriage, I can highly advise it. I do think that a lot of people need to have that type of discipline as a trader as well. And I'm looking for an archetype. Let me explain what I mean by an archetype.
Please.
The actual look of that share chart, I'm looking for three types of different archetypes: a breakout, a reset, or a retracement trade. Let's just take a breakout, so just to keep it simpler. The majority of my trades would be breakouts. They have to fulfill certain rules. They have to be above their moving average on heavy relative volume, and I've got a standard rule for that. Breaking past resistance with a green candle, finishing at or near its high. So it's a very specific thing that I'm looking for, which is what you need to detail in your plan. Your trading system should cover your entry, your exit, and your position sizing.
But might I just say, though, Louise, I understood everything you just said because having been a trader before, I understand what a candlestick is. I know what an opening trade is. Everything you just said, I'm sitting there going, nodding wisely, going, yes, I totally agree with you. But the average punter, I have to tell you, doesn't know this stuff. They simply sit there and listen to the Alan Kohlers and the Peter Switzers and of the world, sit there and go, hey, BHP was doing this and Woolies was doing the other. So when they come along, and some of them who then go and set up their own self-managed super fund, they're presented with their life savings, and some of them are, you know, $500,000, $1 million or even more. All of a sudden, they're being told, okay, you have to have a diversified portfolio, and they're going, what am I going to buy? Oh, I remember Woolies. Oh, I remember BHP. And the immediate thing is they have no reason to not buy these. And that's not to suggest they're not good investments per se, but the rationale, the raison d'etre behind them buying that is anything but what you've just said.
Yeah, I hear you. And this is where your show is developing knowledge in people so they know that that's not the right thing to do.
No, I wish they'd listen sometimes. I tell you, Louise, because some of the frustrations that I have, and I even have this with my own adult children, because I've said to them, make sure you got your super up. You know, first of all, make sure you're getting paid your super, because there's been way too much with wage theft happening in the last five plus years. So that's number one. But the second thing is, you know, look at your annual statements once a year, please. Once a year, look at what's going on. And that's hard enough because they go, oh, that's 40 years from now, Dad, that I'm going to be retiring. But when we're talking, you and I are talking to people in our rough age brackets, and I'm going to give you at least 20 years on me, so I'm being really kind today, but certainly I'm closer to retirement than you are, okay? So I'm talking to people that are in the similar situation. They're not paying attention. And so this is the reason why, particularly one of the things that interested me having you on this show is because we need to start the educative level on equity so much better, because far too many people at my age bracket are investing in stuff they don't know anything about. And so, you know, let's keep talking about trading plans. So you talked before the break about a template. So let's start about this template. Let's have a look at this template.
Yeah. Well, look, the easiest thing to do is to come to my website and download it for yourself, which, as you've kindly mentioned, is tradinggame.com.au. And look, some of the other aspects that we need to bring about for everybody listening is you need to have a look at your psychology. So what are your areas of strength? What are your areas of weakness? I've had people say that they want to spend more time with their family, but they want to chat to trade 2-minute tick charts on the FX market, which never closes. So we have a desire to be busy. We want to seem clever to our friends and family. We want to have a source of identity that says that we're a trader and aren't we wonderful for doing this? And sometimes all of that can conflict with the trading system we've decided to implement.
So are you suggesting, though, that people are trading with a keeping up of the Joneses mindset then? Because that's what that sounded like to me.
Oh, FOMO is a big thing, and comparing ourselves to others, fear of missing out, and that comparison effect, it's huge. It's huge. The number of people who have heard, oh, this person made this much money, and they can feel within them that pit of jealousy, and before you know it, they're taking inappropriate risks. That is the worst possible way to go about trading.
Totally agree.
Binge trading, oh, you're asking for trouble. Scared money never wins.
Oh, gee. The funny thing is, though, maybe because I've been around this game long enough, that would be the last thing I ever talk about at a barbecue with friends is, you know, what I've been trading and what I actually invest in. It's like, that's very private. And
yeah, you're quite evolved, Ray. I think the average person likes to discuss things that they know nothing about.
I guess I'll relate a very personal experience. I used to work for a technology company called Cisco. Now, Cisco back in the late 90s and early 2000s was a treasure trove of millionaires. And I was part of an IPO at the time. I was in a software company based out of Boston. And we got bought by Cisco. And all of a sudden, my, you know, my 6 cent options became, you know, a lot of money overnight. And I met many, mainly men my age that were worth a bucket load of cash. And I'm not talking, you know, $100,000, I'm talking $100-200 million, you know, 20 years ago. And when we turned up to the car park in Silicon Valley, I've never seen so many Porsches and Ferraris in the one place. And the one thing that really taught me is money doesn't make you any nicer and doesn't make you any smarter. And I often use this anecdote because I found that money is actually a great character amplifier. If you were a nice person before you become rich, you become an even nicer person. And if you're an a-hole beforehand, you just become a bigger a-hole when you've got a lot of money. And I got to tell you, that has rung true. And so when I talk to people about trading plans and about, you know, and that psychology that you're talking about, you know, what do you want to achieve? I think that spells out volumes about the person you're dealing with, because that's really laying the groundwork around a whole structure of who, when, why, where, how, etc. And it comes back to that really inner core of, you know, what are you doing here in the first place? I mean, it must be fascinating. You've got a lot of clients that you mentor. Do you ever take a step out and maybe not talk specific finance, but actually talk psychology with them?
Oh, look, all the time. It would be probably 60-40, where it is often somebody's mindset that needs to be adjusted before their system can actually fly. And one of the things that you were mentioning before about people coming to a barbecue, unfortunately, people talk up too soon about their trading aspirations. Mm. And I really think a dream is the most fragile when it is first birthed. So if you are suddenly very excited about your trading future and you can see that this would be the way, just be careful who you tell that to. Be careful what you say to people who are either not in a position to help you or actually in a position to damage you. So many people have their dreams just swept out from under them because of a well-meaning aunt or uncle.
Oh, I come from an Italian background. I could relate so many anecdotes on that level alone, I've got to tell you. But I think one of the most sanguine and salient lessons I can ever give to people, I went to the equivalent of a TED talk many years ago here in Sydney, and I did a talk myself that night talking about dinosaurs, and I was presenting myself as the then dinosaur and the internet. And I saw somebody do a 5-minute presentation on the likelihood of you winning lotto. Now, that to me, believe it or not, is a great equivalence to people that trade on the market and no idea what they're doing. For mine, you may as well go down to the local casino or the local RSL and put it into a slot machine, because you've got just as much chance of winning there as you have on the stock market. And I'm being very critical now, but do you agree, or am I being too harsh there, Louise?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. One of the things that you really need to detail in your plan is your approach to risk management. Mm. So what's your maximum position size going to be? How much are you going to risk in each position, which has an impact on how much you purchase? Mm-hmm. And when do you know that you're in trouble? Now, Ray, you mentioned earlier when you were trading that created some conflict at home. One of the things that I'd like to recommend is that you use, for everybody listening, an if-then statement.
So I like if, those. Yep.
Yeah, they're good, aren't they? They're from the weight loss industry, actually.
Really?
So, yeah. So if the evil donut bringer at work brings around a platter of donuts, then I will make eye contact and smile and say no thank you and then withdraw. Yeah. So with trading, I do suggest if you lose 25% or more of your overall equity, that you stop entering new positions and you consult a higher authority before you put another cent into the market. That is your safeguard. That is an overall risk management protection, so that you're actually measuring that to your overall equity, which I think is exceptionally important. And then you can break that down per share, what you're going to put into each share and how much you're prepared to risk. But having that overall overarching concept in an if-then format that you share with your spouse will protect your marriage.
Well, that's fascinating, because I used something similar, I got to tell you. I used the 10 rule, tens and tens. So I'd open 10 positions, and each one I'd put 10% of the tranche of money that I had available to invest, and then I'd put 10% stop losses on them. And so if I lost 10% of the 10%, the theorem goes that you'll only ever lose 1% of your total pot of money. And given the trading regime and the software, it actually worked very, very well. But let me tell you, the reason why my trading plan failed is because I didn't stay to my trading plan. I fiddled. You see, I'm the great fiddler. I like to tweak. And so I ended up not trusting my own plan. And that's the reason why I was unsuccessful, is because I didn't stick to my own plan.
We need to be smart enough to write the plan in the first place, but then dumb enough to follow it without.
So look, we're coming towards the end of the show, but I'm going to end up inviting you back. I can guarantee you this, because we've still got so much we can talk about. But look, let's talk some basic steps to begin with. How long do you think people should, take time to develop a trading plan for themselves? What kind of time frame do you think is a good starting point?
Look, I do think it is dependent firstly on the information and education that you've got. Mm-hmm. So if you've read some good books and if you have started to be able to detail that trading system that we talked about and all of the things that we've discussed with your own psychology, your risk management, then your trading plan will write itself in half a day. It is very much dependent on the focus that you apply. And I do think that the majority of traders are going to see some sort of return from the markets if they're following a written trading plan with a reasonable term of view, maybe 3 to 5 years, you are maximizing your chances of becoming an efficient trader.
Now, one of the things that I had on my list of questions to ask you, and given that I'm an ex-financial planner, this is something that, you know, the few clients that I did service while I was an FP, not many of them come to an FP to talk about stocks. Is that your experience as well? I mean, one of the things I'd always suggest to anybody making a trading plan is that they then bounce it off somebody, not necessarily a spouse or a barbecue mate, but somebody, a trusted third person. Would you suggest that as well?
I absolutely agree. You cannot edit your own flaws. You can't even see them. So that's such an important step. And also just remember from the maintenance point of view to continually look at your trading plan throughout the years. So I always suggest people have a look at their plan, especially when they're starting, every 6 months to review, with the guise of reviewing their plan to see whether there's any areas to tweak. I think that is a missed step in the majority of traders' lives.
Yeah, it's one of the, it's like our CPD. You can't just rely on, I mean, I people say, oh, Ray, you've got a master's degree, but I smile at them. Yeah, but I actually finished that back in 94.
Yes.
And when I say the words 94 and next year is going to be 2023, my master's degree is almost 30 years old. And so the reality is, yes, there's some core basics there that still prevail. But hey, the world's moved on quite a bit since then. And the same thing occurs with share trading and our own personal development. You can't stand still, can you?
Absolutely. We have to know when to hold to the rules, but also know when to deviate from those rules. And the only way to do that is by collecting data.
I couldn't agree more. And I guess one of the questions I want to finish off today, and please, I want to have you back on the show at another time. The remark that I hear far too often from inexperienced people is they look on share trading as, oh, that's gambling. I want to refute that outright, but I'd like you to maybe have your twist on that. Do you see share trading as gambling?
Yeah, not at all. So with gambling, we are living a lot in the hope domain rather than actually specifically detailing a plan to be able to win. And also the odds of the house are very much against us as the gambler. That's how Crown Casino can make such a fortune. Yeah. Any of the casinos have got that odds in their favour, not in the gambler's favour.
They don't build them because people are winning all the time, eh?
correct, exactly. So we as traders really need to have a very level head. We need to stack the probability in our favor. We need to trade with an edge, which includes trading with a written trading plan, and we need to declare when we are wrong.
Wow, great advice. And I've got to say, it's been a real education for me today. I'm certainly going to potentially download this template because I am thinking of getting back in equities, and I'm going to start small and start educating myself all over again because I think it's time. Look, thank you so kindly for your time today. It's been a real pleasure. I'd like to invite you back on the show if you're happy to come back on. But any final comments before we wrap up?
Look, Ray, one of the things that I have absolutely enjoyed, not only about today, but also listening to the back catalogue of podcasts that you've produced, you have absolutely got it in your heart to help people to make determined and final financial decisions where they are actually prepared to follow their path, to be able to set in their mind what they actually want for the future and follow that line. So, Ray, really, you're doing a spectacular job.
Well, thank you so kindly. Really, really appreciate that. So, Louise, thanks so kindly for being with us today here on Dollars and Making Sense. I'm certainly love to have you back on the show in a future event. And until next time, it's adios.
Fantastic.